Welcome back. This is Startup Capital Season 3. I'm producer Nick Farrell, chiming in to let you know about a special announcement following our interview with Alex and Chelsea Workman. But before we sit down to chat with the fabulous couple behind Ariel Tallahassee, let's hear from Startup Capital hosts Lucas Lindsay and Alyssa McShane. Enjoy the show.
You guys are probably familiar with Lucas's voice by now if you are Startup Capital fans, because he was the voice behind Season 2, and I kind of took over the mic, so hopefully I do a good enough job in filling your shoes.
No, I think this is exactly why Season 3's ratings are going to skyrocket.
How did you feel about Season 2? Let's get right to it.
Man, I loved Season 2. It was incredible to see the growth of the storytelling. It was incredible to see, like, the growth of the production quality, the audio. Just every step along the way, I was consistently impressed by Nick and the Cuddlesoft team and just everything that they were packaging and putting together, making us sound as good as possible. It took a lot of the work, off my plate, and I just got to show up and talk to people and tell stories. It was pretty cool.
You know, that's how I feel so far.
As you should. I mean, I think that, they're doing a great job, and they're really looking at Tallahassee through a different lens, which I think was part of this what we were trying to do in both Season 2 and Season 3, is tell these stories that haven't been told and get a little deeper than you would get with a typical headline.
Absolutely. And a story it's really deeper conversations. That's what drew me to it. Do you learn anything that you didn't already know? Because you interact with a lot of these people already. Did you learn anything that surprised you, or was it all kind of, yeah, I know these people are great?
Yeah, I think I was surprised by a number of different things. In particular, I got to talk to a few companies I didn't know.
That's a start.
Like VR Systems, Bow Stern. We talked about culture, and I think that influenced me a lot in how I ran Domi even. I think I took that back to
made
work.
Made you a better director.
Yeah. I knew of UberOps, obviously, but that ultimate episode at the end of Season 2, that really in-depth, really narrative-driven story, and peeled back a lot of layers of history and really the camaraderie that you guys had that I've seen and observed, but I was just felt so much more real and raw, through the podcast. And then I think the episode that was my favorite, that I really learned the most from, that I think was the most honest episode for me, was the one about K-12 STEM.
That was a good one.
Yeah. And just we got into issues of lack of access and like low-income schools and things that, again, are deeper than the headlines. And I really appreciated having been put in the position to be able to do that. That was a lot of fun.
Do you think some of the interviews made you a little... hate to say you were anything but the best at your job, but a little better at your job? I mean, interacting with them, were you better suited to help companies after you interviewed them?
I think so, yeah. So, there's the episode about life after revenue and some of the struggles of companies that, we spend so much time focused on companies that are early stage, just an idea. How do you get to launch? How do you create a product? How do you find that first customer? 99% of entrepreneurship resources out there are focused on that person, because we're just trying to get a few dozen more of those people.
But then it only gets, harder after you get the first dollar and everyone disappears.
Super hard, right? Yeah. And all the resources, not to disappear, but they just feel like they don't fit as much. And so talking with them had me step back a little bit and realize that Domi, programs like Domi are certainly a resource for people trying to get started. But then there also needs to be resources that follow up along the way. And you need to, do things for people that have more than a dollar of revenue. The most important, how should I put this? So I'm going to go back to the piece about getting beyond headlines.
Totally.
And realizing that these people... I refer to them all the time as entrepreneurs, but they're actually humans, right? Which is an important point. But something happened to me the other day. I was talking to JR, who runs the Startup Grind chapter here in Tallahassee, who's been a great example of an entrepreneur.
J.R. Sims, for our listeners.
But we'd connected through Domi doing those things, but then, you know, we've started hanging out. We go for runs, started being friends, being humans back and forth. And the other day we were talking and he just stopped and he asked me, like, you know, how are you doing, Lucas? You know, how's life? You know, how's things with your wife? How's this or that? And it really caught me off guard because it's very rare that I'm in a Domi type of setting and people ask me anything that's really that personal. And he told me that he had realized one day that I'm also a human being in addition to being the executive director of Domi. And that really struck me pretty hard. And I think that in an interesting way, doing the podcast, with being able to sit down with people like Jason and Mitch, I see them as more than just this archetype of an entrepreneur, the talent that we're trying to retain, you know.
The kid who had the idea.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The headline.
The headline.
And, you know, you get to see them more as people with real struggles. They make mistakes, but are, you know, have good intentions and are trying to learn, trying to do better. And, you know, that was the best part of the podcast for me. It was just fun to be able to get a little deeper.
What are you excited about for the future? And this could be, you know, your own personal ventures, your own personal life, future Tallahassee entrepreneurial landscape. What are you excited for?
Yeah, I mean, how long is this going to be? Because we could be here for quite a while. There really are so many cool things going on.
Let's pick your top
in
three.
In Tallahassee right now. The stuff that Dominic is doing in partnership with FAMU and also the mayor's office is important. And it is revolutionary for this community in a way, but for the greater HBCU network, I think will be really cool. So, I mean, he's taking three students from three different disciplines, putting them in one house for 1 year to launch one startup.
ACT stands for something. The A is art.
Yeah, ACT stands for the three interdisciplinary.
Creative, technical.
The architect.
Architect, that's what
the creative mean. And the techie. So the business, the design, and the technical.
Very cool.
I'm also really excited about some things I'm hearing about occurring around arts. And the incubation of creative fields. So I think that's really important because things like Florida State have such a great fine arts program. There's a great kind of grassroots community of artists, musicians in Tallahassee, videographers, street muralists. And so I hope that we find ways to formalize and empower some of that. And the street muralist piece leads me to the third thing, which I'm most excited about.
Wow, so well curated.
So, Happy Motoring.
Yes.
Super excited about that.
You're not the only one.
Yeah. So, it's a building that was abandoned on South Adams and FAMU Way, right at the crossroads there. And it was a mid-century, 50s, 60s gas station. It was a gas station for a while, and then it was abandoned for a little bit more. And some partners and I were able to pick it up. And it was this underappreciated but beautiful building. And through partnering with some small business entrepreneurs here in town, finding the right architect, finding the right contractor, we've been able to turn it into what I'm hoping will be a really cool neighborhood hangout. So it's going to be a food truck market with a food beverage component, bar, tea, coffee, and all that right there on South Adams. We put a big 3,000 square feet of turf lawn down so people can hang out and throw their blankets out there and, you know, do yoga on the lawn and brunch on Sundays and whatever. We've been working with a local street artist named Cosby Hayes to do murals on the building.
That's going to be cool. The spot. Will find me there, as they say.
You will find me there, too. We'll find
we'll find each other there.
On the lawn, yep.
Do you have any advice for me?
I don't know. I don't know if I have any huge advice.
I think sage wisdom.
You seem to me like a natural having these conversations. So I think that's your competitive advantage.
Yeah, we can't all be where you are, but I guess, yeah, I'll take my competitive advantage.
You don't want to be where I am.
I'm friendly. You're friendly. Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. And I really just, I can see all these things moving forward if we all work together. And so
sure.
I appreciate you sitting down with me, giving me your little bit of advice and your sneak peek into the next big thing. Thank you, Lucas, for being with me today.
Thank you so much. And good luck on season 3. It's going to be great.
Thanks. I hope so. Hello, Startup Capital listeners. This is Alyssa McShane, your Season 3 host. I'm taking over the mic from Lucas for this season, and I could not be more excited to help tell the stories of Tallahassee entrepreneurship. Today's guests are local creatives Alex and Chelsea Workman. They moved to Tallahassee only a few years ago, but chances are you've seen their work. Some have even dubbed their Aerial Tallahassee series the unofficial tourism platform of the capital city. To hear the Workman story and discover the secret behind their viral content, stay tuned to Season 3, Episode 1 of the Startup Capital Podcast by Cuddlesoft. Production support for Startup Capital comes from WFSU Public Media. All right, so welcome back to Season 3, Episode 1 of Startup Capital. We have some amazing guests here today, the Workmans. They're basically Tallahassee famous. I know they got a little uncomfortable when I said that last time, so got some giggles.
Let's be real. Our son is Tallahassee famous, you know, and we are riding the wave.
You really are. You queued me up perfectly, because I was going to say, this is the personal family brand. I was just handed a sticker, literally, of a cartoon of Alex, Chelsea, and Keegan. He's truly the famous one. We can all agree.
He's the junior mayor of Tallahassee.
I love it.
To be real.
That's what we've been told.
So really tell me a little about yourselves. Alex, you're originally from South Florida. Chelsea from Seattle. You guys are big city folk. You moved to Atlanta. You really loved Atlanta. And then you found yourself in Tallahassee. I know that was kind of hard at first, but tell me what it was like to move here. You love big cities, but you came here to start a nonprofit. Tell me a little bit about that. What happened?
Yeah, so we moved here in June of 2014, about a couple months after we got married, which is highly recommended that you get married and then move in chaos. But Alex was working with a nonprofit that was up in Atlanta, and then they relocated to Tallahassee, and that just over a series of events kind of fizzled out, and we found ourselves a few months later in a town that we didn't know anything about, that we kind of hated. We had just found out we were pregnant with Keegan, and it was just really stressful. So our first year in Tallahassee was really rough, and we just had to learn to make it work here. And that's where lots of things kind of started to blossom. But
right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's what happens when you make plans, right? God laughs.
I don't think learning to make it work, I don't want that to say like, oh, we still hate it. Like, we just learned to deal with it, and now we're like, oh.
Right.
Every day we had to wake up and intentionally make the decision that we had to learn to love where we live. And that was not an easy process at the beginning, but it was a process that was very intentional. Mm-hmm. It was something that we had to think about. It was something that we had to plan for. And through that, it really opened up a lot of incredible relationships. And I truly believe that over these last 2 years, we've made some of the best friends that we've ever had.
That's kind of a good life lesson for anybody. I mean, regardless of kind of their situation, scenario, like just kind of intentionally making the decision to love where you are and kind of bloom where you're planted and that sort of thing. Yeah. So that's really wonderful. So if you guys talk to me for a second about what it means to be a storyteller.
Well, for me, I grew up as the son of an art teacher. I attribute a lot of my creativity to my mother. She's absolutely incredible. We drive each other nuts often
when we're
together in the same space for extended periods of time. But
you're the same person.
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
At a young age, my mom handed me like a hot glue gun, and she had this like plastic bin in our garage that she would like throw bottle caps and random things in, and she'd call it the magic art box. And she'd hand us a glue gun, and she'd just say, go build. And so from an early age, there was this desire to create that was instilled in me. I remember my brother and I we would literally make these elaborate architectural structures out of popsicle sticks.
Who needs Legos, right?
Right. And so my mom was a Florida State art grad, which is rather ironic because I had never been to Tallahassee until we drove into town to look for an apartment. But as that art teacher, she brought that teacher home with her, and she was constantly coaching us in creating. And so how did I get started? I think it was just kind of ingrained in me at a young age to create. And where she took very much a fine art approach, she's an incredible painter. I really took the digital creative approach. Mm-hmm. I remember buying my first 3-megapixel camera, and I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. It was the best. And I remember running through my neighborhood as a middle schooler trying to take photos, or maybe in high school. I can't remember when that was. But I always loved people's faces when I took a photo of them.
More candid.
Yeah. And I think oftentimes we live in such an environment culturally where there's this Instagram personality.
Absolutely.
That people have to put on a face. And I think when people are captured in the way that they truly believe that they are and they're confident in and helping instill confidence in people, that's what makes me thrive. I think, you know, my family is really, really important to me. We decided as a family that we wanted to create a brand as a family. We wanted clients and organizations and people to realize, like, you're not just going to walk into an environment with a bunch of stale personalities. Like, you're going to work with our family, and we want to walk through that process with you. And I think being a storyteller, you have to understand a story to tell a story. And it's not just like this buzzword.
Yeah.
That often happens. And so family is super, super important.
That kind of leads me into what I was going to ask you next was, you kind of got started speaking of faith and family and storytelling. There's a Go and Tell story that kind of really spoke to you guys and really got you into what you're doing now. So tell me about that.
For me, our faith is, or for our family, our faith is a huge part of our lives. And there's a story in the Bible, in the book of Matthew, where Jesus says, "Go into all the earth and tell about me, and then tell your story." I take that very, very seriously. I truly believe that everyone's story matters. Everyone's story matters.
Right,
and everyone has an incredible story to tell.
You're not just telling your own story. You're telling other people's stories,
right,
through production,
sure,
through Ariel Tallahassee, which we'll get into later. I mean, how is telling other people's story been so easy for you? The first time we sat down together, you know, I'm thinking, I'm going to be interviewing these wonderful people. And I sit down and Alex asked me, "Tell me your story." And I said, "Hold on, you threw me off for a second. I'm supposed to be asking you your story." But you really just have that ability to get into people's stories and have them kind of tell their values. And that's great. I mean, how does that come so naturally for you?
For me, I think I really value storytelling, but I'm not necessarily the one that is like the go-getter to get the story or to tell the story. I do a lot of behind the scenes of stuff that we do. And so that's just kind of my sweet spot. Like, I put it all together and then it just...
You're perfectly complementary to each other. It's
yeah.
Very obvious.
But for us, just in our personalities of, obviously he is an extrovert. He can make friends with anybody, and it doesn't matter who it is, what they're doing. They could be in the bathroom in two stalls next to each other, and they're going to come out best friends. And I'm just like, okay.
That's literally the weirdest analogy.
I know. So I mean,
supermarket line. No, yeah. No.
He just, everybody gravitates to him, and he gravitates to people. And that's just his personality, and that's how he's always been. And for me, it's definitely challenged me to be more intentional about conversations that I have, be more intentional about relationships.
Yeah.
Like, our personalities just kind of, like, that's how we do business.
Absolutely.
And it works.
And that is something that probably took a lot of practice, whereas sort of it might have been a natural thing for you to be able to pull stories out of people and then just be able to curate it and it not be something that people didn't want to pay attention to. That's amazing.
I'm admittedly not the most patient person in the world.
That's an understatement.
And so when there's 3.5 hours of footage that has to be 2.5 minutes when we're done with it, like,
you're like, I did my part.
I just say,
good luck.
Yeah, it's like, may the odds be ever in your favor. I truly believe that people have value. I truly believe that people's stories should be told. And I think we miss that a little bit from an authenticity standpoint in an environment, in a culture where it's so easy to fabricate an environment. It's so easy to make our Instagram famous lives look so cool.
Filters when,
but when in reality, like, lives are falling apart and they're miserable, but it's easy to smile for a selfie, right? And so I truly believe that in those moments of pain, that it's one of my desires to help encourage people that their value is more than their Instagram personality. Their value is more than what their bum dad told them that they weren't good enough. Their value is more than a terrible boyfriend or girlfriend or ex-husband or wife who was abusive. They're valuable because of that. Their story, we are all people together working in to make this life thing work.
Yeah, and it spreads the compassion and sure. Understanding. What about...
It gives us grace. It gives us grace to know that I am not the only screwed up person.
Right.
And I think there's freedom in that. There's freedom in knowing. There's freedom in coming into a situation with the confidence knowing that I don't have it all together and that's okay.
And speaking of not having it all together, there was a really special project, the Gatlinburg fires,
right,
that you photographed with a friend. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it was probably one of those random things that ever happened. I got a text message, and 2 hours later, I was on an airplane flying to Gatlinburg, Tennessee, and I was working on a project called The Voices of Gatlinburg with a photographer from Nashville named Jeremy Cowart. And Jeremy did this project where he had this desire to tell the stories of those who were affected by those fires, who lost everything. And growing up in South Florida, I've seen hurricane devastation. I've seen some pretty bad storm.
Devastation, right.
And driving through Gatlinburg, it was like slab after slab after slab. I mean, these houses were gone. The forest was gone. There was literally nothing left. There was nothing that people could pull through and could go through their stuff and find. And I remember sitting in this cabin that we were all staying in, and Jeremy made this comment about the challenging of how creative people can help champion and affect those who are victims of disaster. And he actually just did that with Hurricane Irma victims in this project called Resilient Light. You can find it at resilientlight.com and support those families. But coming back to Tallahassee, I had this – it was coming out of this really rough season of my life. But I was really – I mean, we almost moved. We were really struggling with really – is it worth it as a creating in a city that oftentimes doesn't really value digital art. And I met a number of refugee families.
Mm-hmm. The Refugees of Tallahassee Project.
Yeah, I met a number of families who relocated to Tallahassee. It wasn't necessarily their choice. They just, as I learned more about the process, families just kind of get picked and they get told where they're going to go.
Right, circumstance.
And I remember coming out of this Gatlinburg project and watching Time Magazine tweet GoFundMe links for 25 people to 12.5 million followers, and seeing these families who literally lost everything, having people from all over the world raise tens of thousands of dollars for them. And that doesn't even come close to replacing the things that they lost. But the impact I had personally, and then as a team who were all involved in that project, this the ability that a group of creative folks and photographers and filmmakers and storytellers could get in a cabin for a few days and literally change the trajectory of people's lives just by taking some portraits was mind-blowing.
All right, well, that's a great place for us to kind of pause for a second and hear from Cuddlesoft, and we'll be back in a moment.
The Startup Capital Podcast is brought to you by Cuddlesoft. Cuddlesoft is a creative product development agency with offices in Florida and Colorado. We craft beautifully designed and highly scalable solutions for web, mobile, IoT, and the cloud. Our team builds engaging digital experiences by combining years of software design expertise with empathy. From working on the nation's largest IoT network of weather sensors to transforming the way nonprofits deliver in the cloud, Cuddlesoft is ready to handle your business's toughest challenges. To learn more about Cuddlesoft or to get in touch, visit www.cuddlesoft.com.
All right, and we are back. So next, I wanted to kind of pivot and talk to you guys about, do you think some of the quick success can kind of be pointed to having a base already around Aerial Tallahassee? I mean, you guys, an article, September 2015, I know you guys had 250,000 hits on some days alone. You have almost 9,000 followers on several of your social medias. I mean, how do you think being able to reach that base already kind of sparked the quick success of that project?
When people ask me about content, I really believe that content is king and consistency is queen. We live in an environment, okay, perfect example. Last year we went through this election cycle that was absolutely crazy, right? And the perfect example of great content and terrible consistency is that one blog that you would see all over Facebook and then you would never see anything from that blog again. So this guy probably had millions of hits within 2 weeks, but then didn't write anything ever again. Terrible content, great consistency, a middle schooler Snapchat account, right? Now, if someone can merge those two, because we live in an environment where people can just snap content so fast and it's oftentimes not very good, but it's convenient, or someone comes up with a great idea but doesn't create a sustainable process to make that succeed. You know, artists get the bad rap of not being detail oriented and not being planners, and that often gets shown in some of the success or lack of success of many artists' projects, where they have this incredible idea, they get started, and then they're on to the next thing. So I believe that the success that we've seen with Aerial Tallahassee and Refugees of TLH and other projects that we've done, it's everything that we do, we strive to maintain high quality and intentional consistency, because I want people to know that every day they're going to wake up and see an aerial photo.
I know, I saw mine this morning, downtown, beautiful sunrise. It's always something.
And with the refugee project, I mean, the riverbanks are a little bit smaller than that. There's only a certain amount of people, and there's only, out of those people, there's only a certain amount of people who wanted to be photographed and us tell their story. But it was still consistent. And I believe that the success in that was our intentionality and really Chelsea forcing me to be consistent. I remember all of this really started, at least with the refugees. And I have lots of ideas, and she's kind of the one that reins me in. We were laying in bed one night, and she leans over and she goes, "When are you going to do all this stuff you're talking about?"
Hey.
And I don't know if
somebody's going to ask.
Somebody's got to be the pusher sometimes.
And I don't know. I might have been silent for a day after that.
You were mad at me.
Yeah, it was not good.
Because she's right.
Oh, she's always right. We know that.
No, definitely not.
But look where we are today because of it.
Sure.
So this conversation probably came at a time when you guys were kind of feeling down about being here. I know you, like you said, you were trying to get out. And then you bought a drone. What is that story?
So we're sitting on the couch. Well, this is my part of the story. We were talking about this earlier. But we're sitting on the couch and all of a sudden Alex goes, "Hey, babe, can I buy a drone?" I'm like,
oh, no.
So every time I get that question, which I get a lot,
Hey, babe, can I get this?
Can I buy a blank?
Yes.
That's probably out of our price range right now.
What do you think about?
No. I am usually very quick to go, no. However, I've tried to be very intentional about asking more questions before I say no. And so for just about anything, if he can give me some bit of an explanation of what this is going to be used for and prove that there is budget to make it happen and that there will be some bit of success with whatever this is, then I'm open to a lot of things.
She should know that everything she touches is successful, so.
No. Are you kidding me? We don't need to go back to high school. Let's just say geography is not my strong suit.
Every professional endeavor. Let's narrow that down.
Yeah, we can take the last couple of years. Anyway, and so he was like, I just think it'd be really cool to take pictures of the city, and it'd be a cool way for us to explore since we really don't like it here. And so he basically just kind of convinced me that this was a good idea. And I didn't know anything about drones, didn't really care at all about them. So I was like, sure, whatever. And so it really started with wanting to show just some family and friends, like, hey, this is where we live.
We had no intention of really having the community see the work in a way. Like,
this was for you. This was for friends and family.
Yeah,
I'm going to take some aerial shots and I'm going to send them to my grandma.
It was highly personal.
Well, my dad worked for the FAA for 30 plus years. And so he did air traffic control. And so for me, that aviation piece was always a thing. I was never as like in love with it as my dad, but I thought airplanes were cool and I thought, like, I love flying. And so for me, it was just kind of like, okay, this could be an interesting way to learn a little bit more about something that my dad really loves.
Something you guys can then talk about.
Yeah. And then his best friend lives in South Florida, and we just, the two of them were kind of our main, like, hey, we bought this. We want to show you some cool stuff. And then I don't really even know how it blew up.
Yeah, I started posting photos on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
On personal accounts.
You started personal, yeah.
Yeah, so I remember we were at Governor's Park off of Blairstone Road, and I took a photo of downtown Tallahassee from that park. And for whatever reason, I posted that photo on Instagram, and my caption was hashtag Aerial Tallahassee.
And then it was born.
Yeah. And then at that point, I was like, oh, this is like, our friends were like, oh, that's really cool.
And wasn't there one photo that kind of hit the numbers and you said, wait a second, this is kind of gaining something?
A couple weeks in, we got a phone call from like the Democrats saying, hey, do you want to be on the front page of the paper? We're like, okay. And then that was kind of this interesting – it was an interesting journey of, you know, oh, what do we do with this content that we created? And then it was – I would really attribute some of that – some of the growth to a friend of ours named Joe, because he was really the first person to believe that it could be something bigger than it was. Yeah. And he was always – he was the one who was, like, sharing it and tagging people in it. Saying, you got to check this out. This is so cool. And he would – I remember he would sit down and – he played drums at church with us. And he would be like, dude, you guys got to take a photo of this, or you guys need to share it with this person. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Yeah, maybe I'll get there. And he really pushed me to believe that creating those photos were something bigger than I thought it would be.
And he was your champion.
Yeah.
I mean, say what Thanks, you want about Jay. Tallahassee. It's pretty easy to find champions here.
Yeah, I believe there have been incredible folks who have championed us without us even asking.
I think that's the biggest reason that we've stayed, is the people that we've met, the community that we've built and been a part of. It's like, I think for anybody that we meet, we try to not make it just about business or just about a project. Like with Alex being so relational, just as a person, and then my intentionality behind that, like we get to know people, and whatever happens, like, great, we had coffee and we made a friend and we built a relationship. And so it doesn't matter if whatever you're talking about works out or not, or if you can collaborate on something, or if you take a job, or, you know, whatever it is, if we can build those relationships. And you never know, like, absolutely, connections come from all sorts of places, and you never know how those people stay in your life or come back in your life later on.
We just want to create and tell stories with our community, and I think and being intentional about saying, for us, we started the Ariel project really to learn to love where we live. And I know. It's not, I think. There's this mental transition that happened from, I want to learn to love where I live, to I want to create the place that I want to live. And a lot of that was helping champion the value within people, and, hey, how can we live out hopes and dreams? And we're very intentional about doing that. Like, I have some generic rules in terms of, like, business for me. And one of those is that I won't do business with anyone I don't have coffee with first. I remember that was, like, my rule for such a long time. And then I did this quick project over email, and it was a disaster. And
and now it's definitely the rule.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
it turned out fine.
But it turned out fine.
It was a much longer process than needed.
It was just really, really awkward.
And you guys have a rule about your personal connections, right? A week?
Every week it's our goal to have coffee with someone we've never met. And every week it's our goal to have someone in our home for dinner.
Had someone over last night.
Yeah. I truly believe that great things happen over a meal. And I also believe that in the busyness culture of our lives today, the Sunday family dinner and the having your neighbors over is something that we've lost. And for us, we personally have found so much value in that, because we do live in a community with a lot of division. You know, we have three governments on the same block. We have, mm-hmm, two major universities and a community college and a number of other schools that are within a couple of miles of one another. And you have the north side and the south side and Midtown and the west side and
northwest
and the northwest side and the northeast side and the almost to Georgia side. And I truly believe there's more that unites us than divides us. And I think there's definitely people who come to our home that we disagree politically. There might be social issues that we disagree on. But that shouldn't define who my friends are.
Absolutely.
And that shouldn't define my political affiliation or my personal beliefs on how something should happen shouldn't dictate who I'm allowed to be friends with or who would be friends with me. And so there's plenty of people who come into our home that we have, and it's incredible to have honest conversations, because I feel like at that point someone could say, this is why I believe what I believe. We can have, this is why I believe what we believe. Cool. Now we understand each other better. Now we can be better friends, and we can love and respect one another. And I believe that doesn't happen over Facebook, which people try to have that conversation over Facebook and it never works. But I really would encourage people to have people in their home. It's really, really valuable.
It's an excellent rule and an excellent goal, and something that, you're right, everyone should try and get back to. What's on the horizon for you guys? What are some dream projects, something in the works, collaborations?
Survival.
Oh. Survival with a 2-year-old.
Yeah. We're just in a really busy season right now. And so I joke, but at the same time, I'm like,
no,
I just need
survival
to make it through today. So
I told myself that in 2018 that I want to do at least one international project. I've already been asked about going to Greece in May and Israel in June. So that's really exciting to be able to photograph some cool things in different places around the world, helping kind of bring perspective of what's going on in other places back to our bubble of Tallahassee. Oftentimes,
it's something you can't see on the news. It'll be a personal perspective. That's my friend, and he is a really good, production artist.
Oh, you're very kind.
This is the real thing. I know that guy.
I want to continue to develop as many friends as I can. True, like not just like friends on Facebook, right? I want to have people in my home, and things come. Gosh, what other things are coming up on the horizon? It'd be really awesome if like we were pregnant and we like announced it like on
Startup Capital.
We are not pregnant.
Man, that would have been great for ratings.
Right? He'd be like, oh my God, they're having a baby.
Yeah, that would have been ugly crying. We would have had to edit that out.
And then I'd be Nick. Well, and all of you listeners can go to workmanregistry.com and support our future child.
Again.
You're gonna need new stickers. No, I'm just kidding. Yes.
That's what
yes.
Everyone freaked out. They're like, you do know like what happens if you have another kid? We're like,
the stickers go on sale.
We'll get them. Half off. No, I mean, I think we're in talks with some other video projects that are coming down the pipeline. I don't know if there's necessarily anything huge. It's just kind of chugging along.
I love that at Domi, there's a sign that says Sunday isn't a day of the week.
I have a shirt. I mean, it's real.
And there's times that I have to remind myself of
it's
that.
It's a reminder. It's a daily thing. Like you said, it's an intentional decision.
Or you have your wife lean over and say, what are you going to do, Steph? I reminded you.
Or you have a wife that says that.
Who's like way out of my league.
See, I shouldn't feel so bad.
Right. You are the human personification of the Domi poster.
Didn't buy the poster; they sold out, and so you are the exact.
I am the poster. Be the poster.
But I think it's really awesome to be an encouragement for other people to live out who they were created to be.
Yeah.
And that's been amazing.
That has been amazing, and it's been amazing to watch you guys go through it. All right, guys. Well. Alex, Chelsea, thank you so much for being with us on the first episode of season 3 of Startup Capital.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much. You have an amazing day.
You too.
So this is funny. The Workmans are expecting baby number 2. We don't know if Alex can see into the future. But give it up to him because you can now get discounted Workman stickers at wearetheworkmans.com and visit workmanregistry.com. Yes, it is a real website. And in honor of Keegan's new little sibling and the launch of Startup Capital Season 3, we're partnering with Alex and Chelsea to bring our listeners some amazing prizes. For your chance to win, you can subscribe via email at startupcapital.cuddlesoft.com/subscribe between now and Friday, February 23rd. Prizes include an Ariel Tallahassee and Startup Capital prize pack, a pair of Ariel Tallahassee Divvy Up socks, and the grand prize, a free portrait photo session with Alex and Chelsea Workman. Winners will be drawn randomly, but hurry because you only have until Friday the 23rd to enter. Once again, enter via email at startupcapital.cuddlesoft.com/subscribe. That's startupcapital.cuddlesoft.com/subscribe. This show is recorded and produced in the Startup Capital, Tallahassee, Florida.